In what was the bloodiest day in Iraq so far this year, two suicide bombings killed more than 70 people yesterday. The first attack took place in the national capital of Baghdad when a suicide bomber detonated explosives near Iraqi national police officers who were handing out aid. At least 25 were then killed, six of whom were members of the police force. The second and deadliest attack occurred nearly an hour later west of Bakuba, the provincial capital of Diyala, at a local restaurant crowded with Iranian pilgrims. The blast killed 47 people and injured at least 69 more. Two more bombings followed in the cities of Tikrit and Mosul as Iraqi authorities claim the violence was spurred by the arrest and perpetrated Sunni insurgent leader and Al-Qaeda member Abu Omar al-Baghdadi. However, even the U.S. Army has speculated previously that al-Baghdadi could be a fictitious figure in the movement. Just this morning, more than 60 people were killed and 125 wounded by two suicide bombers near a Shiite shrine in Baghdad. The spate of bombings in the last 48 hours, however, were only the most recent in an ever-increasing upsurge in violence in Iraq this month. Between April 16th and 20th, numerous suicide bombings and mortar attacks claimed the lives of 54 Iraqis. Joining me on the line this morning is Dar Jamail. He is an independent journalist who writes for the Interpress Service and Le Monde Diplomatique, as well as Truthout. He's the author of Beyond the Green Zone, Dispatches from an Unembedded Journalist in Occupied Iraq. Welcome to Uprising, Dar.
Thank you, Sonali. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you, too. So these various suicide bombings I read about were quite violent and very dramatic. Over 100 people in just 48 hours and hundreds wounded. What do you attribute this to? Are they coordinated, do you think?
I think it is coordinated. I think it's a resurgence of al-Qaeda operations in Iraq, and it's a direct result of the fact that the U.S. military, who created and stood up and supported the al-Sawa force, the 100,000-strong Sunni militia, al-Sawa means Sons of Iraq, this was the force largely responsible for doing away with al-Qaeda, for running security in their areas of control around parts of Iraq, and they were very effective. We haven't seen bombings like this for a long time, but now we're seeing a resurgence because for two main reasons. One, the U.S. Has ceased supporting al-Sawa in most areas of Baghdad and other places around Iraq and turned control over to the Iraqi government. And then the second main reason is that Iraqi government is not only not bringing them into the security forces as promised, but they're not even paying them. And in fact, they're going out and targeting their leadership and detaining as many of the al-Sawa as they can get their hands on. So we've seen instances of Sawa walking away from their security posts, of protesting, threatening to go out and start planting roadside bombs again, since most of them are former members of the resistance. Some of them are even al-Qaeda members themselves. And so because of that, they're not carrying out their security duties, hence a dramatic increase in the resurgence of al-Qaeda. And I don't expect this to stop anytime soon.
Now, this person, Abu Omar al-Baghdadi, who is he? He was reported as having been killed previously by the United States, but apparently that was not true, and he has now been arrested. Who is he, and is he one of these leaders?
No, he's not. He seems to be a fictitious character so far. There's been no hard evidence whatsoever given to even prove that this individual exists. The U.S. military stated recently that they don't even have one name of like that for an al-Qaeda member in Iraq. They don't believe he exists either. And what's interesting is the timing of the Iraqi government's release of his alleged capture, which came just a couple of hours after the second major suicide bombing of yesterday. I think it's a desperate propaganda attempt to try to appear as though they have some sort of control over a situation which, A, they don't have control of, and, B, they're basically complicit in.
So who's making him up? Is it the Iraqi military?
It seems to be the Maliki government. I don't think it's the Iraqi military. It seems to be Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's government who, they're feeling very threatened and very much in a corner by this huge upsurge, this huge spasm of violence that doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. And B, they need to sort of portray to the Iraqi people that they have some sort of control and that they will be able to bring the situation under control, because we have to remember that Maliki, one of the reasons he was so popular popular in the recent provincial elections the end of this January was because security had gotten so much better than it was compared to, say, in 2006, 2007. But now in the last week, this is exactly what it looked like Iraq in 2006 and up to the middle of 2007. And I think his government is deeply, deeply concerned about this.
Well, many people who were critics of the so-called surge strategy that included paying off these fighters predicted that once this payment stopped, that you would see a corresponding upsurge. That seems to be coming true right now. Dar, do you see most of the targets over these past several days and earlier in the month being primarily Shiite targets because the Sawam movement is Sunni dominated?
No, I think well, certainly, as you said, the targets are primarily Shia. We saw today one of the most important shrines in Iraq had two major suicide bombings, a Shia shrine, and most of the other targets have been either Shia pilgrims or Shia markets, etc. And this is because, I mean, this is how Al-Qaeda operates. Al-Qaeda is an extremist Sunni group, not directly tied with al-Sawa or the Iraqi resistance, but they believe, of course, in the only pure Muslim is Sunni of their brand, and all Shia must therefore be eradicated. And so I think that, you know, this smacks of Al-Qaeda. This is exactly the same sorts of bombings we saw when they were really at their peak through 2006 and in early 2007.
But as you said, there is a little overlap between Al-Qaeda and al-Sawa.
There is, and it's, you know, everything in Iraq is complex. You can't be cut and dry or black and white about anything, and it is possible that some of these former or even current Sawa members have decided to go back to their al-Qaeda roots because some of them absolutely are infiltrators for al-Qaeda, so that's certainly possible. But I think overall, most of the Sawa who are deciding to abandon their post and start carrying out attacks, they're going back into kind of classic Iraqi resistance attacks, planting roadside bombs. We just recently saw three Sawa members were arrested by Iraqi forces just south of Baghdad planting roadside bombs, and this is becoming a daily occurrence now. And this is why we're also seeing a relatively dramatic increase in the number of roadside bomb attacks.
So roadside bomb attacks increasing because of Sawa members, suicide bombings increasing, very likely a result of al-Qaeda tactics.
Exactly.
And all of that happening at the same time.
Exactly. And all of this is a direct result of, as I said before, it was only a matter of time before when the U.S. stopped paying al-Sawa and when the government attacks on them continued as they have since October, which was the initial month they were supposed to be rolled over into the government security forces. When I was there in Iraq in this past February, I actually spoke with Sawa members around Baghdad. Many of them had said, look, we haven't been paid since October. We're having trouble keeping our people under control. They're getting very angry, and the government has been targeting us. This is not going to last much longer before we start fighting back.
Dar Jamil, now why is the government targeting al-Sawa instead of incorporating them into the security forces as had been promised? It seems like an obvious recipe for disaster.
Well, it is, but we have a Maliki administration, a predominantly Shia government that feels very threatened by the al-Sawa. They do not want these people to have political power. They fear that if they roll them into the government security apparatus and start paying them, it's going to legitimize them and give them more of a position of political power so that in the upcoming national elections, they'll be better suited to have some of their candidates in higher positions in the government. And they feel threatened by that, and also they believe, look, these are people who've been carrying out attacks against the government in the past, and now it's our chance, now that we know who they are, since they're in the Sawa and they're standing out on the streets of Iraq running security operations, now it's our chance to actually go out and pick these people up and put them in jail for what we think they've done in the past. And so these are really the two main reasons why the government is going after these guys. And again, I don't see this stopping. The U.S. is not putting any pressure on the Maliki government to stop that or find other ways to try to invoke reconciliation. And the government, of course, is feeling more and more threatened by the day.
So you bring up the U.S., which, of course, we must talk about, being that it is the sort of major context for all of this. Basically, what we're seeing is a civil war breaking out into even greater depth than before. But the United States is drawing down its forces at the same time, and many outposts by the United States are likely going to close very soon. Where does the U.S. figure in this, notwithstanding, of course, the context of the occupation? operation itself, but even just in these current dealings. As you said, the U.S. is not pressuring al-Maliki to try to incorporate these forces into the security forces, but what else is the government doing, the U.S.?
Well, it's amazing that they're really not doing anything right now to stop this. They've put themselves in a position where they're not going to pressure the Maliki government, and they're certainly not going to reincorporate the SAWA and start paying them again because, A, the money's just not there, and, B, I don't think they have the facilities to do that as they did before. But I'm very hesitant to start talking about the U.S. Well, they're really making moves to start closing down outposts and things of this nature, because it was just within the last about week and a half that General Odierno said, look, I know there's this June 30 deadline to start pulling out of the cities because of the status of forces agreement, but we're going to be handling that on a city-by-city basis, and already basically said that, for example, up in Mosul, where the city is largely out of the control of both the U.S. military and the Iraqi government forces, that the U.S. Will likely be staying in there after June 30th. And then he came out a day or two after that and said, look, and then there might be other cities that we have to do the same thing. So once again, we're seeing this big rhetoric come out talking about withdrawal and pulling out of cities and respecting agreements, et cetera. And then in the aftermath, we're starting to see kind of the fine print come out where they say, well, but there may well be exceptions, or we'll leave that up to the Iraqi government, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm going to be very surprised if come June 30 we see a total withdrawal of all U.S. forces onto the bases and out of the cities. I just don't think we're going to see that happen, especially now in light of we're still, a long ways in front of that deadline, over a couple of months still, and we're seeing the biggest upsurge in violence in Iraq in about 2 years.
So, does it seem to you that this enormous upsurge in violence could possibly be a pretext for the Obama administration, or could be used as a pretext by the Obama administration to either prolong the war or even get back into it?
I think it will, because if this amount of violence continues, it's going to be very easy for them to say, look, we have to do this. We have to go back in. We have to actually, instead of taking troops out of Iraq and putting them into Afghanistan, we're going to need to keep more there, or maybe even start sending even more to Iraq. If this continues, I'd be very, very surprised if they didn't take one of those tacks.
But even if the U.S. did withdraw completely, how would it change anything on the ground with these sorts of attacks that we're seeing currently? I mean, would these attacks start slowing down or stop, or would they simply keep increasing?
Well, it's really difficult to say, because the reality is when we look at everyone being killed in Iraq today, it's a direct or indirect result of U.S. policy there through the occupation. If the SAWA had never existed, the Iraqi resistance themselves were taking out al-Qaeda in all the areas where they were not being hampered in going after al-Qaeda by U.S. military forces. This was documented even by the U.S. military itself. We would certainly see bloodshed continue as different groups are struggling for political power. There hasn't been a whole lot of reconciliation, but again, the U.S. has continued to support one group and then not another, and then switching sides and giving another group more support than another different group, and playing sides off of one another, running the sectarian-based death squads that really led to most of the violence through 2006, 2007. So again, in most of these instances, not to say the Iraqis do not have a role, of course they do, but in most of these instances, the larger aspects of why some of these horrendous events have been set up that are generating so much death, it's all a result of U.S. policy in Iraq. And the bottom line is none of this sort of thing, whether it's al-Qaeda operations or massive sectarian violence, none of this existed prior to the U.S. invasion of Iraq.
So then continuing the conversation about the U.S. occupation continuing or not continuing, it's almost a moot point, would you say, and really what needs to happen is the pressure on the Maliki government to try to draw down this unfolding civil war and diplomatic means, a diplomatic role for the United States.
Well, I think so. I think, the first thing the Maliki government should do that I think would have a dramatic effect on the situation and to improve it would be to incorporate the SAWA, start bringing them in as promised months ago into the security forces. And the U.S. Is certainly in a position where they could pressure the Maliki government to do that. because if they did that, these people would be paid. They would be then have legitimate security positions in the Iraqi police and in the Iraqi military, and they would certainly resume their operations of going after al-Qaeda. And I think we'd see a dramatic decline in the number of attacks being carried out. And then, of course, they would cease their operations. Sawa would cease their operations in attacking government forces and U.S. forces.
But the al-Qaeda would not necessarily cease their operations. If anything, they might escalate them.
Well, and that's my point. But if the Sawa were paid once again and stopped being targeted by, if the government ceased their targeting operations against them and rolled them into the security forces, then Sawa would go back to resuming their security operations and going after al-Qaeda, because they were the ones that actually, they were the only ones, including the U.S. military, being unable to do so. It was the Sawa, which basically so many of them, according to the U.S. military, are former Iraqi resistance. These are the people who knew how to find al-Qaeda and go after them and stop their operations, because they know security in their areas better than anyone else, and they would be able to do it again.
Well, Dar Jamil, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. Where can listeners read your work?
My website is simply dar.org, D-A-H-R.org.
D-A-H-R.org, and you have a new article that you're working on about these latest attacks?
I do. It's coming out today on Truthout, and it will be about the attacks yesterday and the cause of them and what's likely to happen in the future.
That is dahrdar.org, and you can also check his latest article later today at truthout.org. Dar Jamil, thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali.
Dar Jamil is an independent journalist who writes for the Interpress Service, Le Monde Diplomatique, and Truthout. He's also the author of Beyond the Green Zone, Dispatches from an Unembedded Journalist in Occupied Iraq.